This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry, oldest of five kids, and boy, do I get grief for that. Thanks for listening. In honor of the Harbaugh versus Harbaugh Super Bowl this weekend, did it escape you that the coaches of the two teams, the Ravens and the 49ers, are brothers? Anyway, we will discuss how important birth order might be in the grand scheme of things. How much does birth order matter in your family? And we'll be hearing your stories of sibling rivalries throughout the hour. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE to weigh in. We begin with another oldest, Hillary Rodham Clinton, Big Rodham's sister to Huey and Tony, top-notch student, bound for glory from an early age, tough fighter from the moment she burst on the national stage, running with Bill Clinton to be co-president, you might say, back in 1992.
I suppose I could have stayed home and baked cookies and had teas, but what I decided to do was to fulfill my profession, which I entered before my husband was in public life.
The co-presidency thing didn't quite work out, but this powerful first lady stood up to the forces she believed were trying to bring down her husband.
The great story here, for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it, is this vast right-wing conspiracy that has been conspiring against my husband since the day he announced for president.
Hillary Clinton said that back in 1992, just as the Clinton scandals were getting going. It turned out that the vast right-wing conspiracy got plenty of help from Bill Clinton's own vast supply of inner demons, but that story ended when Bill Clinton left office and Hillary became a senator from New York State. 8 years in the Senate, and then a run for the White House herself.
Although we weren't able to shatter that highest, hardest glass ceiling this time, thanks to you, it's got about 18 million cracks in it.
This powerful also-ran became Secretary of State, a high-profile position she made the most of for the past 4 years. And in her last big moment on the stage, she was still a fighter, here toughing it out earlier this month with critical senators over the security situation in Benghazi, Libya.
The fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator.
In her 4 years, Hillary Clinton has visited 112 countries, more than any other Secretary of State. In the latest NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, she has an approval rating of 69%, hugely popular among her base, women, and within the Democratic Party. She says goodbye to Foggy Bottom of the State Department today. But are those statistics a way of judging a Secretary of State? John Cassidy, staff writer for The New Yorker, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me on, John.
It's a kind of a somber moment. We say goodbye to Hillary Clinton and Ed Koch, mayor of New York. I know you're familiar with both of those characters.
Yeah, I went to Ed Koch's the new screening of the documentary about him the other night. He couldn't make it because he was ill.
Oh, that's a sad moment. But anyway, on Hillary Clinton, are approval ratings, traveling, being something of an ambassador, a way of judging the greatness of a Secretary of State?
Well, they are to some extent, I think. I mean, I should start by saying I've always been a big admirer of Hillary. I've always admired her drive, her energy, and the example she sets for other women and the passion she brings to things. She's a great life force, a femme formidable, as the French would say. But I think people have gone a bit overboard, including the president, on her role as Secretary of State. The president said in the famous 60 Minutes interview that she was one of the greatest Secretary of States ever. You know, that's pretty tough company if you're going back to John Quincy Adams and Dean Acheson and even, you know, Kissinger in a sort of great and evil way.
Great and evil way. Well, let's look at the metric here. The sort of measuring stick you use is, would anything that happened during the last 4 years not have happened without her? And you say probably not, that she sort of rode the White House vision of foreign policy, not contributing anything of her own.
Right. Well, I quoted some foreign policy experts saying that. The knock on Hillary, and it's not a knock on her personally, it's just a knock on the position she held, is that she was basically an ambassador for the Obama administration rather than a policymaker. What we see in modern times, and we saw it with Colin Powell, we now see it with Hillary, is that foreign policy is basically set in the White House. Presidents are not willing to hand over big stretches of the world to the Secretary of State like Nixon did to Kissinger. They decide the policy in the White House, and they then tell the Secretary of State to go out and implement it. Obama was very explicit about that. He said the other night on 60 Minutes that when he hired Hillary, he was basically hiring her as an ambassador to represent the country around the world.
And to take care of really the damage control that he felt needed to be the recovery mode for what happened during the Bush years. And even people who have followed Hillary Clinton suggest that much of what she was doing was a kind of damage control.
No, exactly. I mean, I think Obama realized he was going to be too busy on domestic policy with the financial crisis and the Great Recession. He wouldn't have time to be flying around the world. Hillary has always had a fantastic work ethic. We've all seen the figures for, you know, frequent flyer miles. I think she clocked up a million miles on her 757 and, you know, visited 112 countries. She always throws herself into whatever she did. But the question, if you're judging her as a great Secretary of State, is what are the specific achievements that, you know, the history will remember? There are some. You know, she helped put together the coalition, which voted for intervention in Libya. She helped get Chinese dissidents out. She spoke out in favor of civil rights. She did a lot of campaigning on behalf of women's rights around the world.
She personally intervened to get Chen Guangcheng out.
No, exactly. She happened to be there when it was all going down, and she did a great job on that. I mean, you know, I'm not knocking that at all. But if you compare that to, say, Dean Acheson, who's always the sort of prototypical great Secretary of State, who defined the sort of policy of containment for 30 years, or George Marshall, who was associated with the Marshall Plan, or going back, John Quincy Adams, who sort of came up with the Monroe Doctrine, which helped, you know, dominate U.S. policy for 100 years. I don't think historians are going to look at Hillary in that sort of context.
This is a bit of a cautionary tale for John Kerry going into this position. I'm wondering if there's any evidence that Hillary Clinton pushed the White House on something and didn't get any response.
Well, that's very interesting, John. There was a story out last week, presumably leaked by some of the people around Hillary, that sometime last year she did make an effort to push the White House on the Arab-Israeli conflict. One of the big gaps in her resume, you would say, is, well, she didn't do anything about, you know, solving the Middle East conflict. She did actually help broker a ceasefire in Gaza between Israel and Hamas. That's an achievement, shouldn't be forgotten. But, you know, there was no great Obama-Hillary peace plan. Now, her aides have now leaked that actually she pushed the White House to try and at least get Obama to define what the outlines of such a plan would be, but the White House pushed back. That shows, you know, the limits of her power within the administration, really.
Well, she certainly, you know, leaves office at the top of her game politically, but the legacy for foreign policy, I guess, is subject to debate and question. John Cassidy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
John Cassidy is a staff writer for The New Yorker. And now a different view of the Hillary Rodham Clinton legacy from someone who has worked with her for decades. Milan Verveer served as Clinton's chief of staff in the secretary's time as first lady, followed her to the State Department, where she's now the U.S. ambassador at large for global women's issues. She says Clinton need make no apologies for any work others might say was left undone.
It's been an extraordinary journey, to be sure, and it's been a time to see real progress and a time yet to continue the journey. You know, I was thinking that the president in his inaugural address mentioned Seneca Falls and how we still are marking the footsteps of our forebears. And that was a time, you know, over 150 years ago in the United States when women were struggling for equal rights in this country. And I always tell women around the world, we're still part of this journey, no matter where we live. So I have been on this journey with Secretary Clinton starting from those early years when she was First Lady.
What would you say the profile of Hillary Clinton as First Lady and as Secretary of State, how has that changed during the time, the two decades that you've been involved with her, particularly internationally as you go from country to country?
Well, when she took on the role of First Lady, I don't think she had any plan in terms of international affairs or certainly the issues that she has come to be known for and championed in the realm of a women's progress around the globe. And it was an evolving process. And I think one of those seminal moments was at the UN Fourth World Conference that took place in Beijing in 1995 when for all the world to hear, she said, it's time for us to break the silence.
If there is one message that echoes forth from this conference, let it be that human rights are women's rights and women's rights are human rights once and for all.
And, you know, for everybody there in that room to have a woman who was viewed even then as powerful because she was the wife of the President of the United States, after all. And she was taking on these issues that many felt they were struggling with alone and raised them to a level of world spotlight. And of course, in Beijing, 189 countries adopted a platform for action, which in many ways sparked a movement. And that movement continues to this day. And I think her sparking that movement in many ways and then being Secretary of State today in a truly powerful position where she is engaged in the highest level with world leaders and her foreign minister counterparts, and to continually raise these issues and consistently note that no country can get ahead if it leaves half of its people behind, has been a pattern for her and a commitment of hers that is deeply rooted.
I'm wondering how you and the Secretary of State responded to this horrible incident of the gang rape in India and all of the soul searching that that's caused in that country.
Well, it was indeed a horrific incident. And, you know, this whole issue of violence against women and girls is really a global epidemic. And I think the positive that has come out of something so tragic is that both in India and beyond, where you've had this tremendous outcry of civil society, of people in all walks of life, men and women saying, it's time for change, it's time to do something about this. And you've had the government, for its part, putting into place special courts to begin to deal with this issue in a more aggressive, serious way that it deserves. So I think the positive that's come out of this, it's as though we've seized a teachable moment, and I hope it will be sustained, because this is one of those issues that requires everybody to do their part.
What would you say the sense, the sort of gut-level feeling of Secretary Clinton is right now? Relief, accomplishment, head held high, anxious for the next chapter?
Well, I hope she has a sense of a job well done. She has certainly done her best and moved a lot of important issues forward, and certainly underscored what we as America represent around the world. And I think in the months ahead, she will continue to work on these issues. We shouldn't be surprised wherever she finds herself in the future that she will continue her commitment to these issues.
Milan Verveer is U.S. Ambassador at Large for Global Women's Issues. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.